This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Eric Sorensen, Executive Director of Carbon Roots International. Eric Sorensen is here today to tell us about the work of Carbon Roots International, a Seattle nonprofit that produces green charcoal and biochar to reduce deforestation, increase agricultural productivity, and alleviate poverty in Haiti. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What led you to start Carbon Roots International?
Carbon Roots International was founded by myself and my two co-founders in 2010, partially in response to the earthquake in January 2010 that was in Haiti, outside of Port-au-Prince. And my father actually went down to Haiti after the earthquake to do some work. And through his time there, we got connected with a Haitian-American family that eventually invited us down. And our first trip to Haiti was in September 2010. And our experience in that first trip kind of led us to go ahead and start an organization. And here we are a few years later.
What is the goal or mission of Carbon Roots International?
Carbon Roots International's mission has actually expanded and I think deepened over the course of our three-year lifetime. It began as an organization searching for a model on how to implement biochar in the developing world. Biochar, for those who aren't familiar, is a form of sustainably produced charcoal that is used in soil. So it can be viewed as a fertilizer replacement, but it's really a soil enhancement. And there are a lot of benefits to putting charcoal in the soil. But when it comes down to it, it basically builds soil fertility over the long term, and it doesn't break down in soil like fertilizer nutrients. So we went to Haiti to really kind of research biochar on the ground in the developing world because we thought it was an interesting tool and look for a way to implement it in a developing world context like rural Haiti. And we ended up finding that while agricultural yields is very important in Haiti and boosting them, we still feel is very important. A more pressing need, and in fact, a linked problem, is the problem of charcoal consumption as a fuel source. And so that has led us to expand our mission to include both the production of biochar for the soil and what we call green charcoal, which is sustainably produced charcoal that is pressed into briquettes, and those briquettes are used as a cooking fuel.
Let's now look at biochar and green charcoal, each individually and in more detail. Would you say more about how biochar works?
The best explanation of biochar that I've come across that's used often when talking about it by people in the community is that biochar is like a coral reef for the soil. When we think about coral reefs, we think about an ecosystem, and really the coral is the skeleton of an entire ecosystem that's housed within it. And that's a good analogy for what biochar is in the soil. At a microscopic level, this charcoal looks like a sponge. It's very porous. It has lots of surface area. And what that does is it basically houses microorganisms that produce the nutrients that our plants eat. And it also grabs on to nutrients. It helps with pH and all sorts of other things. But basically, the way I like to think about it, and myself not being a soil scientist, but really being an implementer and a practitioner, is that it's a skeleton for the soil. And fertile soil is really more alive soil. And biochar helps enhance that. And because it's carbon, and because it's not the nutrients themselves, but it's just a housing for the organisms that make the nutrients, it's a long-term solution. It doesn't break down in the soil. So what it does is it creates a housing. And when the rains come, which would normally wash away a lot of the microorganisms, in fact, they're able to remain close in the topsoil and not get washed away because they're kind of protected in this sponge, this coral reef, if you will.
What is the evidence that biochar actually does increase soil fertility?
There's a growing body of scientific literature to the efficacy of biochar, proving its usefulness in a variety of different soils. It should be used in concert with some sort of fertilizer. Usually in the biochar world, we say to mix it with natural fertilizers like compost or compost tea, things like that, basically to charge it with organisms before you put in the soil. The developing world context is completely different than a field trial here in the States or in the UK where there's a big research center. In Haiti, we had a lot of false starts to try to manage our own field trials. And what we ended up seeing is just we would introduce it to farmers, and about 10 to 20% of them would actually take it back and try it out themselves. And that was where our proof came, was returning and seeing what it's doing in these farmers' soils. They would set up, you know, half a field with biochar, half without. And it was a very observable difference, I should say. There was a huge difference between the fields with biochar and the ones without. Now, there's a lot of questions about attribution and things, but there's a growing body of evidence, we feel, that on the ground in Haiti, it's making a huge difference. And I should say that when we're producing charcoal, we're not going out and cutting down trees. We're producing it from agricultural waste. And I can explain about how we do that, but certainly in Haiti, it's very important to stress that we are not exacerbating the deforestation problem. In fact, we feel like we're providing a solution for it.
How does biochar help sequester carbon? That's another one of the features that you speak about.
It is another one of the features. When we make biochar from sustainably produced sources, in Haiti that means agricultural waste. We're largely making it from sugarcane bagasse, which is sugarcane waste after it's been processed at a distillery or a sugar factory. And when left out in the field, really in a mound or in a pile, that sugarcane bagasse would decompose. And that process of decomposition is basically the carbon breaking down and being released back into the atmosphere, the vast majority of the carbon. And that's a carbon neutral atmospheric cycle. When we can take that waste and the carbon within it that would be released back into the atmosphere, and we can carbonize it, we basically trap about 30% of that carbon as charcoal in a stable form. And when that's put in the soil now, it's not going to break down. So we're kind of capturing 30% of this carbon that would be going back into the atmosphere and putting it into the soil. And in that way, it's a form of sequestering carbon in the soil. So biochar is said to be one of the only ways we really know how to reverse our cycle of putting carbon into the atmosphere. And we can actually take it out and put it in the soil.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Eric Sorensen, Executive Director of Carbon Roots International, a nonprofit that produces green charcoal and biochar to reduce deforestation, increase agricultural productivity, and alleviate poverty in Haiti. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Could you just underscore again the environmental benefits of the biochar?
Sure. In Haiti, the environmental benefits of biochar is multifarious. It begins with the increase in agricultural productivity, and biochar in Haiti has a lot of benefits, and the environmental and the social kind of go hand in hand in a place like Haiti. People aren't cut off from the environment in the way that we are more here in the States. And people are really living the result of the environmental degradation there. So what we do is we're promoting a way to make charcoal out of agricultural waste, and we are turning it into cooking fuel as well as biochar. And those two problems are interlinked, we find. In Haiti, about 98% of the country is deforested. And what that means is that the hillsides that once were jungle are now stripped of its trees, and with that comes erosion. And so there's massive loss of agricultural lands in Haiti. And with that, you see farmers with less income. Their soil is poorer because the soil washes away and then the nutrients wash away. And that just lowers incomes and then reinforces the reliance on charcoal cooking fuel, which exacerbates the deforestation and which is what has brought Haiti to where it is today.
Would you say more about the agricultural wastes that are used for biochar?
Yeah. When we originally went to Haiti, we were primarily working in the central plateau of Haiti, which has a lot of corn waste, corn, rice, beans. Those were the types of wastes we were using to produce charcoal. And now we're based in northern Haiti and primarily using sugarcane waste. And the way we turn agricultural waste into charcoal, basically to carbonize it, is using a kiln design that we've kind of adapted for the Haitian context. And it's based around a 55-gallon barrel that we produce locally. We source all the materials locally. And it costs us about $25 to make one kiln and to get it to a farmer. And with that kiln, you know, it takes about an hour to convert 55 gallons of agricultural waste into charcoal.
What is the cost for the farmer?
I really think that a lot of our innovation as an organization comes from our implementation model. So what we do is, as an organization, we go out and we recruit farmers and come to them really with a proposition and say, you know, we have a way and a technology to turn your waste that you're currently not using. Very few farmers make compost or mulch out of the agricultural wastes, and we don't encourage farmers who are using them in those ways to turn it into charcoal. But most aren't using it in those ways. So we say, we've got a way to convert your agricultural waste into charcoal using these kilns. We'll give them to you up front, and then you can pay it off little by little. And what we're going to do is we're going to come back every week and we're going to purchase whatever charcoal you make. And in that way, it creates another source of income for those farmers. And for us as an organization, it's basically building our supply chain. And we bring all that charcoal back to a central production facility we've constructed. And at that facility, we turn about 80% of that charcoal, that raw material, into briquettes for cooking. So they kind of look like, if we think about our Kingsford charcoal briquettes here in the States, it's a similar type briquette that we're producing and then selling to households as well as larger institutions through women-run charcoal retailers. And then 80% of our raw materials go into the briquettes, and about 20% is set aside as biochar to be put in the soil. And we're doing a variety of different things with that biochar right now, a lot of it research-based. And we're also cycling a lot of that biochar back to those farmers who are producing for us. So in addition to cash, they get some biochar that they're able to put into their field and increase their own agricultural productivity.
Well, you've been alluding to the green charcoal, but let's talk in more detail specifically about green charcoal. So just remind us again, what is green charcoal and what are its advantages?
Green charcoal is a sustainably produced charcoal from a non-wood resource that's used as a normal wood-based charcoal would be used. We create it in Haiti out of largely sugarcane waste currently, but basically agricultural waste and waste organic biomass. And we convert it into basically carbon form. And in that form, it's crushed into carbon dust. And we take that dust and we run it through some briquetting equipment we have. And then what you're left with is kind of a briquette that we use here in the States in our barbecues. In Haiti, 9 out of every 10 people rely on charcoal and solid fuel on a daily basis. So to them, this is an alternative fuel that crucially doesn't require a different type of stove. So green charcoal is kind of an alternative to the clean cook stove movement, which seeks to change the actual cooking apparatus that people are cooking on. And one advantage we see as green charcoal having over that is that it doesn't require really a big behavior change. You can just go out to the market, to one of our kiosks in Haiti. You can purchase green charcoal briquettes. An important point is that they're cheaper than the wood-based charcoal, and bring it back and use it on the stove you're currently using. It's cleaner burning, it's carbon neutral, it supports the livelihood of these rural farmers. We think there's a lot of benefits to this, to both the consumer, the producers, and to all of us, because it's protecting forests in Haiti.
How are the Haitians responding to both the biochar and the green charcoal?
In Haiti, the biochar is a bit more of a complicated sell to people, largely because most farmers don't use soil inputs in Haiti. So there's very little use of, you know, compost or fertilizer. And so it's tough to go to a farmer who's used to just kind of planting their plants, waiting for the rains to come and seeing what happens, to say, here's something that's going to help you with that. And we're not trying to sell it to them, but if we were trying to, that would be very difficult to get them to now invest money in soil when they weren't doing it prior. And even if we were to subsidize it for them, it's a bit tough because of cultural sensitivities. So we've seen about 20% of the people that we introduce to biochar really use it and are seeing really great results and are turning into our local advocates for it, which is great. And that's a more long-term strategy of ours, is to increase and enable the adoption of biochar across Haiti. The green charcoal, there's a ready market waiting for it, because like I said, 94% of people use charcoal and wood on a daily basis in Haiti. And so that's a base need. People are going to need some fuel to cook with. And our sell to them is, here's an environmentally sustainable fuel, and you're going to save money by using it. You know, it's about 10 to 20% cheaper than wood charcoal on the market. And that 10 to 20% savings is huge. you know, when you're spending about 40% of your income on fuel. And we've just launched a couple retail kiosks within the last couple months. Things are going great. Our strategy as an organization has always been to quickly prototype things and not throw too much money into one thing until we've already tried it on a small scale. And we know we're going to make mistakes, so we want to make our mistakes small and make them early so we don't waste anyone's money.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Eric Sorensen, Executive Director of Carbon Roots International, a Seattle nonprofit that produces green charcoal and biochar to reduce deforestation, increase agricultural productivity, and alleviate poverty in Haiti. To what extent are green charcoal and biochar being used worldwide?
There's certainly a growing biochar industry here in the States. There's a few biochar organizations, more than a few, around the world that are, you know, devoted to implementing it with different strategies in the developing world. There's some research centers, a big center of research is in the United Kingdom. And green charcoal is really largely in the developing world. There's a handful of organizations in Africa. There's a few in Southeast Asia that are doing it with different models. I mean, what we're excited about is our model that basically brings in a bunch of farmers to our supply chain. So we're not producing everything ourselves. We're purchasing our raw materials from farmers, and we're enabling them to make our raw materials and kind of spreading around a lot of the revenue that way. And there's one or two other organizations that have a similar strategy, one of them being EcoFuel Africa in Uganda, who's been a really important partner of ours.
How large is your organization in Haiti, and who is involved?
As I mentioned earlier, Carbon Roots International was founded by myself and my two co-founders, Ryan Delaney and Hannah Erickson. All three of us actually know each other from high school. We all went to high school here in Seattle at Roosevelt High School. But from our humble beginnings, we've got about a dozen Haitian employees. I split my time between the States and Haiti. My partner Ryan lives in Haiti full time. And as I said, we've got about a dozen Haitian employees, as well as a very important base of supporters, both here in Seattle and around the country.
What do you see as your greatest challenges for implementation?
I would be remiss if I didn't say funding. We've really gained a lot of traction in terms of funding in the last year. We've received grants from USAID, Halloran Philanthropies. We got second in the Global Social Venture Competition last year at UC Berkeley. But, you know, we're basically running a business in Haiti for social benefit, and revenues certainly haven't caught up to costs. So funding is always a big thing and a big hurdle. But beyond that, really our biggest obstacles are changing the perception and the consumer habits of our stakeholders in Haiti. It's proven difficult, not impossible by any means, but difficult to change cooking habits in the developing world. And I think the Clean Cook Stove movement would agree with that. And largely because cooking is a very central part of life, more so, I think, in the developing world than our own. But if we think about even our own lives, how much time is spent thinking about food, preparing food, how much money we spend on it. So, you know, when you learn how to cook one way on one stove and you grow up only doing that, it's tough to kind of just turn on a switch and change completely. As I mentioned earlier, I think green charcoal is a nice alternative because people don't have to change their cooking stove. It functions more or less the same as wood charcoal. And again, it's cheaper. So we think it's a sustainable but appropriate technology for the developing world.
What are your observations about the conditions in Haiti right now?
The first time I went to Haiti was after the 2010 earthquake. And so I can't speak to how it was before then. But certainly after, in Port-au-Prince and the surrounding areas, you know, there was a lot of destruction, a lot of loss of life and property, and rebuilding was slow, to say the least. But I've seen a lot of improvements, I feel like, in the last several years. And that being said, our work is really based outside the capital. And right now, our central office and our production center are in and around Cap-Haitien, which is the second city of Haiti, but it's in northern Haiti. It was really untouched by the earthquake. And so the people we work with have been affected, certainly indirectly, by the earthquake. But the earthquake, you know, generally didn't create much of a stir in northern Haiti. And that being said, Haiti is often said that it's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It was, I think, ranked between Afghanistan and the Central African Republic on the 2013 Failed State Index, which is maybe a good barometer of how things are going. And in addition to that, it's a very complicated place because of the long history of U.S. involvement. So we kind of carry that baggage as foreigners, as outsiders, as strangers, and we've tried to be cognizant of that and respectful and really listen to our stakeholders. We didn't come in saying we've got the silver bullet answer and here it is. We came in saying we've got an idea and we've got a tool and let's figure out how you can use it. And in that process of learning is when we kind of expanded what we do to include both sustainable cooking, green charcoal, as well as biochar, because we saw that the real need and what the locals were telling us was not, we want to grow more food. It was, we need something to cook on because charcoal is more valuable than food to us. So that was a big eye-opener for us. And we really took that to heart and then went back to the drawing table and came up with a project and a business model that was really informed by our stakeholders.
How would you sum up the accomplishments of Carbon Roots International so far?
I would say that every week I do our bookkeeping and I get that warm, fuzzy feeling inside, seeing how much money we're paying people. And that's like a very simple barometer of our success. But I think that in the basis sense, we're there to create jobs and hopefully do it in an environmentally sustainable manner. And we've done that. We employ a dozen Haitians directly, indirectly over 50, about 75 currently. And by the end of 2014, I foresee that being 400, 500, 600 of our charcoal producers that we're supporting. And I think also we're proving that there's another way to approach charcoal cooking stoves, the health and environmental issues surrounding the kitchen in the developing world, and also proving that there's a linkage between deforestation and low agricultural yields. And we don't have to choose which one we're going to identify and try to solve. I think if we're going to try to change the way people cook, we should also look at all the impacts that their current cooking practices have. And in Haiti, it's a very direct link between charcoal cooking fuel and poor soil. And we're showing the international development community that we can address both these in kind of a holistic and social business model.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I invite everyone to check out what we're doing. The best place is to go on our website, carbonrootsinternational.org. And I would say that before I went to Haiti, it was kind of in the background is what's going on in Haiti and really the larger developing world. And it seemed like there was a lot of despair, a lot of natural disasters and poverty. And I really didn't know how one would go about trying to help. And I would say that to listeners, my message would be that there's a lot of really interesting innovations going on the ground in the developing world. There's a lot of hope. There's a lot of promise and potential. And we're just tapping into a very small part of that in Haiti, in rural Haiti ourselves. But there's a whole world of possibility in organizations that are working to try to solve these problems in ways that don't adhere to the traditional kind of aid, you know, paradigm of we're giving them things. There's a lot of interesting ideas that are being tested and piloted in the developing world. And I encourage listeners to check them out, to get excited about it, and to support them if they feel like, you know, it warrants it.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Eric.
Thank you so much.
You were just listening to Eric Sorensen, Executive Director of Carbon Roots International. For more information, check on the web at carbonrootsinternational.org. Again, that's carbonrootsinternational.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.